people cried out in pain. They staggered and stumbled into the walls, concussed by proximity to the twin blasts. "Engage! Engage!" shouted Copley. In the smoke and dust, two Fire Warrior breacher teams spilled into the halls, right on top of the Elysians. Pulse blasters fired at close range, their rounds biting through armor into human flesh and bone. Arcturus was hit hard. For the first few moments, confusion reigned. Then hard training took over. Well-trained minds switched into reflex and conditioned response. Those unhurt brought their fury to bear on the Tau. Intense, messy, desperate. When it ended, six Elysians, Drake, Becker, Rice, Gaman, Yan, and Ludo, were dead. One more lay mortally injured, his life leaving him. Copley knelt beside the wounded man and removed his helm. Viggs had stepped across to cover her back just as a Fire Warrior unloaded his pulse blaster at her from 3 meters away. Even as Viggs's torso was being hollowed out by the Tau bastard's white-hot rounds, he managed to fire his lasgun on full auto right at his killer's head, the beams punching straight into the expressionless, backswept alien helm. The captain had saved Copley's life. The price was his own. Copley removed her helm and looked down into his eyes, but the light was already gone from them. They were dull and flat. Gone was that unwelcome intensity with which they had always shone when he looked at her. This one time only, she wished it was still there. Around her, the rest of her operators covered the corridor and the breaches in the walls that the Tau had made. They didn't turn to stare at their commander. Duty was foremost in their minds. Sorrow would have to settle for second place. They had a job to do. Right now, that meant covering the Major while she made her farewell. She didn't have time to make much of one. The Tau would hit them again, confident their numbers had been reduced. She pulled Viggs's tags off and pushed them into a pocket. "I know you loved me. Thank you for not saying it. I couldn't have returned it. I think you knew. It's just not in me to give. But I'll be seeing you soon. We all will. Hang back a while and meet us at the gates, and we'll all go to the Emperor's side. Together. Imagine that. Arcturus all together. Marching into the Emperor's light." Gently, she lowered his head to the floor. "Get tags from the others," she commanded, her voice taking on an icy hardness.
"Already done, ma'am,"
said Morant, standing at her side. He put a hand on her shoulder. She shrugged it off and straightened to face him, eyeball to helm lens.
"None of that," she growled. "You hear me?"
Morant, tough as he was, as grizzled as any of them, looked at the floor, abashed.
"Vix and the others got warrior's deaths," she said. "Well earned, and we'll be joining them soon enough. Before that, we've got a bloody job to do. I need the rest of you to take up the slack, because now more than ever, how good you are is going to make all the difference."
Morant stepped back a wide pace and threw up his sharpest salute.
"Ma'am."
Over the vox, Copley called in Coulson and Morrow.
"Leave the stairs. I need you here now. Move."
Seconds later, they joined the rest. She looked at what she had left. 8 men and her. It would be enough because it had to be. She thought of Spear Team 3. They were out there under Broden's command, searching the hangars for sign of Epsilon. She hoped they were faring better than this. The Tau had made 2 breaches in their surprise attack. Beside Viggs's body lay the snake picture she had been looking at when the Tau teams attacked. She swept it up and walked to the nearest hole in the wall. There, she poked the lens around the fire-blackened corner and studied the screen. Satisfied, she handed the device off to Morant, who was standing beside her. He was the most senior man left alive, the last of her sergeants apart from Grigalitz, but Grig was out there leading Team 3. She told the others,
"From now on, you're all Team 1. Morrow, sling your lasgun for now and pick up that grenade launcher.
Morrow crouched by the body of Drake, a man he'd fought alongside for almost 2 decades. There had been close calls before, but they'd always made it through. Archangel had always got them through.
It couldn't last forever,
muttered Morrow to the ruined body of his friend.
It couldn't last forever,
muttered Morrow to the ruined body of his friend as he tugged the grenade launcher free of the dead man's grip.
But I'll keep making them pay while I can.
He stood with the weapon and nodded to Copley.
The rest of you, she continued, strip the bodies of everything we can use. That goes for the Blueskins, too. They'll have grenades. Be quick about it, because in 4 minutes, I want us inside that main control room.
She jabbed a thumb at the hole in the wall.
The Blueskins just gave us 2 new avenues of attack, and we're going to make them regret it.
Chapter 50
What word, brother?
4 Space Marines looked at Androcles expectantly. It was Pelion who had asked, but it was to all of them that Androcles said,
Nothing. No response. I cannot raise scimitar on the Vox. So that's our Geminus now, observed Rowan.
He let the other possibility sit in the air, unspoken. Strigo spat a curse and turned away. Gedeon frowned at the Carcharodon, then said to Androcles,
Broden knew he was putting his head in the lion's mouth, going straight for the landing fields. The Black Templar is a contemptible bastard, but not a fool, said Rowan. The Storm Ravens could have picked us up and flown us in fast to support him, but he wanted us on foot. Why? So that we would be outside the town noose when they closed it. Broden was keeping us back for a reason.
Androcles voxed Captain Tarvel aboard the Thunderhawk. The moment he heard Tarvel's voice, his heart sank. The Tau weren't jamming after all. Broden and his kill team were probably down.
I cannot raise Scimitar Alpha on the Vox, the son of Antaeus told him. Can you?
The pilot tried, then reported that he could not.
Do you have a visual?
Swinging back around. Hold on. While Androcles waited, Gedeon told the others,
If Scimitar is out of the game, it's all on us and Talon now. And Archangel's people. We need to get to the landing fields fast. I don't like it, muttered Rowan. Cold Wave knows our objective is Epsilon. All around the spaceport, the Tau armor is waiting. The blockades are for show. He knows all our elements will have to converge on the landing fields to get to her. He'll lock the place up tight as soon as he thinks everyone has entered his trap.
In our favor, said Pelion, he has no real idea what constitutes everyone.
So far as we know, said Rowan.
Tarvel addressed Androcles over the link. Black Eagle to Scimitar Alpha, the hangar is a ruin, smoke, dust, and rubble. No sign of Scimitar, no movement. The Tau have surrounded the site, infantry and armor.
So they are down, said Androcles heavily. What of the Elysians?
Spear teams 1 and 2 are engaged with Tau defenders inside the spaceport building. Spear team 3 has just hit the ground with Talon 6. They're moving to search the hangars around landing field 3.
What of Talon? Asked Androcles.
Talon reports that they are en route to the landing fields, still outside the perimeter. There are several Tau armor and infantry blockades between them and the objective, but they are pressing ahead as fast as they can.
What were your last orders?
Scimitar Alpha ordered us to circle the spaceport, keep Tau air support off their backs, and provide close support when called on. Reaper 3 is providing air cover to Spear Team 3. Reapers 1 and 2 are on standby, watching for air threat, ready to provide close support as needed.
Apprise me of any changes, Black Eagle.
Of course, my lord. Androcles dropped the link.
It's grim, he told the others. Cold Wave couldn't have known about Black Eagle and Scimitar, or even how many survived the fall of the tower. But he prepared ground forces here for a full assault. I don't think we've seen the true extent of what we're up against. Not yet. With Broden down, said Rowan, he'll expect all other elements to race to the spaceport to try and fill the gap. He'll know we can't let Epsilon get airborne.
What choice do we have? Said Gedeon.
He knows where we have to go as well as we do. Androcles, said Gedeon, how do you want to proceed?
The giant considered it only briefly.
We can't let Spear Team 3 run the search alone. And we can't expect Talon to hold off Cold Wave's forces single-handedly once they're on sight. Tau Air Support is almost definitely on its way. Perhaps additional infantry and armor, though it will be slower to arrive. We have to make the best of the situation we have now, before it gets worse. I can't see any way to avoid Cold Wave's noose and still get to Epsilon. Our forces are stretched too thin, so we go. And trust to our strength as Space Marines. The Xenos will fall before us, said Gedeon with feeling. No matter their number. As will Cabanon and Lucianos, said Rowan. I will eat their primary hearts, rumbled Strigo.
The others looked at him with a mix of amusement and mild disapproval. There was a good chance the Carcharodon actually meant it.
What about their secondary hearts? Asked Gedeon with a grin. Those I will crush with my boot, said Strigo.
Gedeon and Rowan laughed. Androcles grinned, but he said,
No, brothers. I seek retribution just as you do, but the objective is Epsilon. Stay focused. If the Emperor is smiling, the one will give us the other.
Then may his smile be blinding, said Pelion.
Maintain stealth, said Androcles. We'll move faster if we can avoid engagements. Is that clear, Strigo? No killing until I say. It will only slow us down.
The Carcharodon's black eyes flashed, but he nodded.
My killing I will see for later.
The increasing presence of drone patrols as they neared the landing fields made moving roof to roof a bad idea, and infantry walked the streets. So they moved through shadowed alleyways and evacuated buildings as the sky lightened above them. They passed barricades where hammerheads and devilfish sat shining in the rays of the new day, engines humming, the air beneath them shimmering and shifting. They went carefully past these places, well aware that the Blueskins' advanced optics and scanning systems might pick up on the tiny thermal, infrared or ultraviolet traces they left in passing. Even air displacement and sound might give them away. Their modified scout armor was a blessing here. Without the power pack of full Adeptus Astartes power armor, there were no telltale traces of ionized air that the Tau drones might have registered. Shadow to shadow, cover to cover, they made impressive time. And soon they were stacked up behind a hangar on the northern edge of Landing Field 3. They could hear gunfire to the southeast.
Saber Alpha to Reaper 3.
Voxed Androcles, as he and his team circled around in that direction.
We have sounds of battle to our southeast. Status report on Spear Team 3.
Flight Lieutenant Dargan responded,
Spear 3 found a mid-sized trans-atmospheric in Hangar Far East. They are assaulting with Talon 6. I'm on station providing close support, but the fighting is inside. I can't help them directly.
Far east, repeated Androcles.
He pulled up the memory of the spaceport layout as he had studied it back at Chathanahadik.
400 meters southeast of us, said Rowan. Reaper 3 be advised, said Androcles. Saber squad is moving in to support. We'll be breaching through the north wall.
Acknowledged, Saber Alpha. will keep any blueskins off your back. Spear 3 is on Channel 8 Gamma 2. Talon 6, likewise. Good hunting.
Androcles moved Saber at a run. Soon they were stacked up against the wall of the hangar. Like all the hangars around the landing fields, it was vast. Large enough to house a heavy lifter or even an atmosphere-capable interstellar barge. It was 200 meters on a side. Within it, brought to their enhanced hearing despite the thickness of the walls, Saber Squad could discern the rattle and crack of a fierce firefight. For the first time that day, Androcles wished he was wearing an Adeptus Astartes battle helm. He could have patched into a visual feed from Talon Squad's dreadnought and got an idea of what he was leading his kill team into. Instead, he'd have to trust in rapid assessment and space marine reflexes. They'd never let him down before.
"Saber to Spear 3," he voxed. "My team is stacked and ready to breach the North Wall. Request heavy suppressing fire on your targets, Spear 3. We will breach and smoke them. Take them up close. Watch your fire when we do."
"This is Sergeant Grigolitz, Spear 3 leader. Confirmed, Saber. Glad of the assist. We have a large Imperial craft dead center of the hangar. I'd guess you're gonna recognize it. Tau infantry in heavy cover behind cargo crates and atop the fuselage."
He broke off to return fire at the blueskins, then continued.
"There's an XV-8 with two shield drones slaved to it. We're having trouble with that one. So far unable to knock the shields out. Talon 6 can't slay the XV-8 until we do. Your assistance there..."
Androcles looked at his brothers. Pelion and Gedeon had finished planting charges on the outer wall. They moved to a safe distance and nodded to Androcles. The others stood with them, rounds chambered, safeties off.
"Suppress now, Sergeant," said Androcles. "Saber breaching in 3, 2, 1.
Chiron's storm bolter chugged from under his massive power fist, spewing mass-reactive shells at the Tau positions. Helmed Xenos heads ducked back behind plasteel crates and containers. Those on the back and wings of the black spacecraft dropped to their bellies. Around him, the men of Spear 3 rose from their own cover and unleashed a furious volley of lasgun beams and grenade rounds. The hangar shook with the noise. Only the damned XV-8 battlesuit dared to stand in the full fury of the human attacker's wrath. Flanked on either side by each of its troublesome shield drones, and partially protected in front by a reinforced ceramic barricade. Hotshot las rounds smacked harmlessly into the invisible barrier around it. Everywhere they hit, the wall of energy rippled with incandescent color. The battlesuit pilot was fixated on Chiron, the biggest and most dangerous target in his sights. For his part, Chiron wanted the XV-8 just as dead. But he had already been frustrated in that. His twin-linked las-cannon beams smashing against the energy barrier without effect. The XV-8's pulse cannon barrels whined as they spun. A torrent of bright blue rounds stitched the air in Chiron's direction. A dozen smacked hard into the dreadnought's armor, staggering him, forcing him back behind a dull red container, the surface of which glowed hot wherever it was hit.
"I'll take the wretch's head," Chiron roared.
There was a crump of explosives. The hangar wall shook. Smoke began to billow up in great thick clouds around the Tau. Chiron emerged from cover and saw muzzle flashes and the bright flash of energy rounds lighting up the smoke from within. The fighting inside the dense veil was intense. Chiron saw a chance to press forward. On the vox, he ordered Spear Team 3 to move up. The dreadnought stormed forward on piston legs, shaking the ground. Sergeant Grigolitz and the 6 troopers still left to him, Loran and Rush having been gunned down mere moments ago, pushed up in Chiron's wake, cover to cover, unable to fire into the cloud lest they hit Saber Squad. Extractors in the hangar's ceiling were starting to thin the smoke. Figures began to form, just shadows, but it was easy to distinguish friend from foe. The Elysians began firing again, gunning down Tau infantry while they were focused on the space marines attacking them at close range. The Xenos on top of the ship were less pressured. They spotted Chiron and Spear Team 3 pushing further in, and sent a deadly rain of fire down upon them. Rounds rattled on Chiron's massive shoulders like rain, biting into the ceramite surface but going no deeper. Corporal Sky went down screaming right next to Chiron. Plasma had struck him between plates of carapace armor and buried deep into his chest, incinerating the flesh and bone. Chiron sent a storm bolter burst at Sky's killer, but the fire warrior dropped down again in the cover of the spacecraft's broad back. A space marine emerged from the last of the smoke then, storming along the spine of the ship, his stalker pattern bolter spitting death at the Tau infantry lying belly down there. Within 4 seconds, Gedeon had cleared the top of the spacecraft. The smoke was all but gone. Strigo, bolter slung on his back, a short power sword in each hand, had found the shield drones in the melee and cut them down. The XV-8 whirled on him, too close and too fast to dodge. He suddenly found himself on his back, swords cast aside, each hand gripping a barrel of the XV-8's pulse cannon, as the pilot tried to force the weapon down towards the Carcharodon's snarling face. Strigo's muscles rippled under his tight-fitting stealth suit. Veins stood out like power cables on his thick forearms. For all his formidable strength, however, he was not winning the fight. The pulse cannon barrels were almost at his face. Had he still a man's face, Chiron would have smiled. The ugly, bestial-looking space marine had just given him a gift. He fired. Searing las cannon beams as thick as a man's arm lanced out and ripped into the XV-8, center mass, blasting it backwards with a great smoking crater in its armored torso. It hit the floor of the hangar and skidded, lifeless, its pilot and power systems dead. Strigo rolled and grabbed his swords. Rising, he nodded in Chiron's direction and scrambled to cover as a volley of ion and plasma rounds chased him. Saber Squad fired back, while the remains of Spear Team 3 flanked right. With the XV-8 down and their numbers depleted, the Tau in the hangar were broken. The sounds of battle died off as the last of them were slain. Two had tried to surrender. Strigo grinned hideously as he separated their heads from their bodies. Androcles scowled. He approved of the execution, but not the way his squad brother reveled in it. There was no glory in killing a broken foe. As Alpha, he knew he would have to bring Strigo into line sooner or later. But not today. Saber Squad, Chiron, and Spear Team 3 converged at the lower rear ramp of the ship.
"Song of Skaldara," breathed Gedeon.
She was typical of an Inquisition stealth infiltration craft, her lines sleeker, less blocky than a corvette or cruiser. Far from elegant, but there was something of a great, dark bird of prey about her. A brooding thing, a silent watcher that missed little.
"I'd not thought we'd ever see her again," said Pelion,
staring up at the smooth black hull.
"Now that I'm in front of her," said Gedeon, "I feel nothing. I remember only the foul betrayal of her mistress."
"Just a ship," rumbled Chiron, "and not the one we seek."
"So Epsilon will travel on a Tau ship," said Rowan. "That makes sense. The Tau executed our navigator. They'll use their own people to get wherever they're going."
Mindful that Scimitar had been buried under a hangar such as this, Androcles had everyone search for explosives, but none were found. Over the vox, Dargan of Reaper 3 addressed him.
"Saber Alpha, you have Tau forces converging on your position from the west. Reaper 3 moving to engage, but they have a sky shark. In daylight, their missile AIs can get a visual lock. High risk. Advise you move things along down there."
Chiron was already stomping towards the hangar's main entrance. His power fist had ripped the heavy plasteel shutter apart at the beginning of the attack, gaining him and Spear Team 3 initial entry. Through the ruin of the shutter, he spotted a broad line of enemy forces approaching. His battle lust suddenly reignited. Inside his armored chassis, what remained of his original organic body flooded with adrenaline and excitement.
"Androcles, Grigolets," he boomed. "Go scour the other hangars. I will keep these curs busy."
"Pelion," said Androcles, "search the ship, then catch up to us."
From outside there came the familiar drumming of heavy bolters. Reaper 3 screamed from the sky, raking the Tau forces, ripping into a dozen infantry and blowing one of the Sky Shark's impulse jets. The anti-air tank rocked sideways with the explosion of its left engine. Its right side scraped rockcrete, throwing up a shower of sparks. As it did, it managed to turn its turret and lock onto Reaper 3. There was a roar and a flash of fire. A Seeker missile slid from its pylon and lunged into the air after the Storm Raven. The rest of the Tau column, spread in a broad battle line, continued to advance. From just inside the hangar, Chiron lined his twin-linked las cannons up on the Devilfish armored transport in the center. He aimed roughly at where the craft's reactor would be, and loosed a shot. Beams buried deep into the curving, tan-colored hull. The machine froze. Then the reactor detonated, blasting the armor apart from within, hurling shrapnel into the closest infantry, and cutting down seven of them. Chiron chuckled to himself.
"A good kill to start things off," he boomed to the others.
There was no one there. They were already moving north, to the next hangar at a run.
"Bah! I never needed an audience anyway,"
he said happily, and broke from cover to throw himself in among the foe. As he thundered forward, his next las cannon blast struck one of the Sky Shark's remaining five Seeker missiles and started a stutter of explosions that ripped the tank and surrounding infantry apart.
"Reaper 3," he voxed. "Sky Shark destroyed. You are free to re-engage with impunity."
No answer. He noticed a column of thick black smoke 500 meters south, tilting with the wind as it rose. He stitched the advancing Tau line with storm bolter fire now that they were in range, then stole a quick look south that confirmed his suspicions. Reaper 3 was down, scattered over Landing Field 3, in 1,000 twisted pieces. The Sky Shark's missile had knocked the Storm Raven from the sky. The Lamenter remembered his momentary feeling of kinship with the pilot, unified with his craft, the machine becoming the body. And now Dagon was dead, killed by puny Tau. At least he had died in battle. Chiron envied him that. His spirit would have peace. Tau rounds rattled off his chassis, drawing him back. The Xenos were closing, trying to deploy heavier, closer-range weapons that might stand a chance of bringing the Dreadnought down. They wanted to get closer? Good. He would crush them, pulp their bodies with his power fist. That would be much more satisfying. With a terrifying roar, amplified by the vox grills on his glasses, he surged towards them, giving himself over completely to the savagery within. When he was done, the rockcrete around him was awash with blue blood.
"More," he growled. "Not enough. Bring me more."
He remembered the report of Tau converging on the ruin of the hangar, which had been brought down on top of Scimitar. Infantry, armor. He barely stopped to think. On piston legs, he cursed for not being faster. He struck out across open ground, making straight for the far side of the landing fields, and the larger fight he hoped to find there. Chapter 51. Copley grabbed the Earthcast supervisor's body by its collar and wrenched it backwards off the console. It hit the floor with a thud. Behind her, half of her remaining people were dragging Xenos corpses out of the way. The other half were either welding the outer doors shut or hunched over the Tau consoles, poring over hollow menus for any subsystems they could put to use. Copley let her gaze run over the displays and glyph boards in front of her.
We've got everything here. Holovid feeds from practically everywhere. Long-range aerospace scanners. Even orbital satellite links.
She just had to get control of it. From the tower windows, she had an unparalleled view. Fires still blazed in the northeast, where Sabre Squad had hit the fuel silos. Black smoke still rose into the sky from the ruins of every defense tower the Imperial gunships had hit in the opening stages of the assault. She couldn't see Black Eagle or Reaper flight. But if she could hack the hollow feeds, she'd have a much better picture of things.
Archangel to Scimitar Alpha, she voxed. Spear One has the control tower. I say again, Spear One has the control tower.
She awaited Broden's gruff response. Nothing. It was Morant who called her attention to a hollow feed from the periphery of the landing field to the west.
Flattened, he said grimly. They brought the whole hangar down. Scimitar must have been in there. See the tower surrounding the rubble?
Copley squinted at the display. Morant was right. The Tau had deployed infantry, devilfish transports, and a hammerhead tank in a broad semicircle around the ruins.
Archangel to Scimitar, she voxed, desperation edging her voice. Respond!
Silence.
There's something else, said Morant.
He thrust his chin at another display.
Chiron, breathed Copley. What's he doing?
The hulking lamenter was pounding in the direction of the ruined hangar and the Tau surrounding it.
He's going to engage them alone, said Morant.
He couldn't keep the incredulity from his voice. The dreadnought was fearsome, true, but didn't he see how badly outnumbered he was? If the Tau saw him coming, and they surely would, the hammerhead's powerful iron cannon would cut him open like a can of beans, no matter how thick that chassis armor was.
Reaper 3, voxed Copley. Assist Talon 6. Run a flyby on landing field 1 and strafe those damned Tau.
Static. No response.
Reaper 3, Dargan.
Morant put a hand on her arm.
Ma'am.
Copley followed his gaze to the top left holo display. At the edge of the hollow pictor's field of view, she saw smoking metal strewn across the rock crete. A lot of it. The familiar shapes of several of the larger pieces left no doubt.
We're down a storm raven, said Morant.
All Imperial air units, voxed Copley. Archangel has the control tower. I want a sit rep, now!
Gracker, Reaper 2, was the first to respond.
Engaging ground forces, Archangel. Just north of your position.
She looked north and saw a black shape there, fast-moving, silhouetted against the sky.
They're tightening the perimeter, Major, pulling back from the junction barricades and pushing for the landing fields. I'm doing what I can to whittle them down.
Understood, Gracker. Stay on them till further orders, said Copley. Reaper 1, status.
Ventius sounded tense.
Strafing ground targets northeast of the landing fields can confirm Reaper 2's report. Tau ground forces converging en masse around the spaceport. They've abandoned their blockades. Cold Wave is tightening the noose.
Morant glanced anxiously at her. She didn't meet his gaze. Instead, she studied the other hollow displays.
Where the hell is Epsilon? No sign of her, or Coldwave, yet. Black Eagle, are you reading me? Black Eagle copies. Go ahead, Archangel. What's your status?
Engaging the Razor Sharks, ma'am, but they keep dancing just out of range. Best I can do is keep them off our ground teams.
Copley stepped back from Morant's console and took in all the displays above it at once. Why did she feel so exposed right now? Something was definitely wrong. Those hairs on her neck again. A voice called out from the other side of the control room. It was Triskel.
Major, I've got air contacts leaving Zushan and Natol, ETA 8 and 11 minutes respectively.
Read their glyphs.
All fighters, ma'am. No bombers, no transports.
Copley's shoulders sank. She felt a deep aching in her muscles and joints. Tiredness was creeping up on her. Post-adrenaline crash. Or were the meds she'd taken wearing off already? The harsh, wet cough that repeatedly reminded her of their degenerating condition was getting worse among her men. Behind her, Vanoff had finished welding shut the doors. Before that, he had set trip lines and frag mines out in the hallway. No one was getting in any time soon. Certainly not in the 8 minutes it would take the first of the damned air-cast jets to arrive. When they did, Black Eagle and the Storm Ravens would be badly outnumbered. Easy prey. Once they were down, she and her team would be sitting ducks up here in the tower.
"This shitstorm is about to get a lot messier," groaned Morant. She could hardly argue with him, but the others didn't need to hear it. "Arcturus has handled messy before," she said for everyone's ears. "We'll handle it again."
She pressed a finger to the transmit stud of her Vox pickup.
"Talon, where are you?"
Karras's voice came back, deep and somehow reassuring. At least the Death Spectre was still in play. He was something different, powerful in ways she didn't understand. For some reason he made her feel like almost anything might be possible, even here, with Shadowbreaker barely holding together at all.
"Talon on site now, Archangel. We remain undetected. Spaceport, north side. I can see Reaper 2 above us. Still no word from Broden?"
"Nothing," replied Copley. "I'm taking back operational command, Scholar. Any objections?"
"None," said Karras. "Let's get this done. Orders?"
"Talon 6 is making for the hangar where Scimitar went down. Heavy Tau presence. He's on his own, Scholar. Not responding to hails."
Karras was briefly silent.
"Chiron can handle himself, Archangel. Suggest we focus on finding Epsilon."
8 minutes. Just 8 minutes.
"Agreed, Talon. Be quick. We're about to lose air control. Fighters inbound. 8 minutes out."
"Talon hears, Archangel. We move."
"Black Eagle,"
voxed Copley.
"Coordinate with Talon squad. Keep the Tau from slowing them down."
"Understood, Archangel. Black Eagle moving in to support."
"Reaper 2, I want you running close support for Saber squad. They're sweeping the hangars around Landing Field 3. And watch out for Sky Sharks. We've already lost one gunship to anti-air. Can't lose another."
That left only Reaper 1, Ventius. It was all she could do for the Dreadnought. Give him the last of their air support, and hope it would be enough. Maybe the Dreadnought's fight would draw additional Tau forces away from the kill teams. Maybe not. Reaper 1 confirmed orders. A moment later, a bulky black shape with Death Watch and Ordo Xenos markings screamed past the tower, so close it shook it. Ventius, on his way to aid Chiron. Copley covered her mouth and coughed. When she looked into her hand, she saw red flecks there. She wiped her palm on her thigh.
"No," she told herself. "Not until this is over."
Chapter 52. As he bore down on the Tau around the destroyed hangar, Chiron laughed at himself. He knew the odds were not in his favor. His chances of survival were poor. It excited him. Maybe he would finally die in battle. He'd have preferred Tyranids, selling his life dear against the foe he hated most of all. But Xenos was Xenos. Honor was honor. And death in service to his oath and the Emperor would see him reunited with his brothers at last. Before that, he would revel in carnage. Archangel tried to direct him elsewhere, to support Saber Squad and Spear Team 3. He was having none of it. They would manage. They had a Storm Raven on station overhead. He had made his choice. Full credit to the woman, though. She hadn't used armor lock on him for failure to obey. Sigmar would have. Closer now.
Up ahead he saw fire warriors in sand-coloured armour moving methodically over the great mound of plasteel and rockcrete that had crushed Scimitar Squad. They probed the rubble, searching for signs of the bodies underneath. Hard to believe Broden had been taken out of the game so early and so easily. But the Black Templar had seemed the type to make hasty mistakes. All bluster, no brains.
Like knows like,
Chiron thought, and laughed aloud. The sound boomed from his vox grills, harsh and clear, carrying to his targets. Those closest heard him. They spun and saw his black bulk powering towards them like a runaway train, little over 100 meters off. Fireblade officers began gesturing and shouting. Those among the rubble stopped what they were doing and ducked into cover to take up firing positions. The others out in the open dropped to a knee and leveled their guns at him. The two devilfish transports swung around to face him, their gun drones and pulse cannons zeroing in. The hammerhead turned its turret in his direction. Its railgun was the only weapon they had which was capable of one-shotting him.
"You're first,"
thought Chiron. He sighted his twin-linked las cannon on the Tau tank. The ion cannon was powering up, the muzzle aglow. Pulse and plasma fire filled the air like a sudden squall, pouring at him, smacking into his glasses, scoring the thick ceramite of his huge, boxy shoulders. He was about to fire when something dark plummeted from the sky above like a diving falcon. There was a sound somewhere between a low bark and a rattle. The Tau hammerhead shook, armor-piercing bolt rounds rippling over its turret, biting deep, shredding armor. Reaper One screamed back up into the air, out of range, and swiftly banked for another run. In her wake, the railgun's power cell detonated. A flash of blue light that turned the tank into blazing scrap. Grav engines died. It dropped, hitting the rockcrete hard.
"Kill denied,"
thought Chiron, part rage, part admiration. It had been a graceful kill, pleasing to watch. His las cannon swung left, locked onto one of the devilfishes and cut right to its machine heart. Reaper One screamed in and strafed the ground again, this time smacking a dozen Tau from their feet, spreading them across the landing field in wet blue smears, grisly and merciless. Chiron Cord, the other devilfish, then charged forward again, ignoring the rounds biting fist-sized craters in his armor. He pushed into Stormbolter range. Raising his power fist under which the Stormbolter was mounted, he raked blistering fire across the infantry, cutting down 7 in the first sweep. He laughed, lost in the rush, his mind unclouded. In battle came the only reprieve from his sorrows. It was all that made continued existence worthwhile. As he killed, he prayed for more. More enemies, more armor, more risk, greater odds, more.
"Don't let it stop. Don't let me win. Make this the day, damn you. Give me a foe to equal my solemn wish."
From further along the edge of the landing field, hangar shutters began rolling upwards. Fire warriors spilled out, followed by the flowing shapes of more Tau armor. The infantry taking cover in the rubble on his left began peppering him with shots. Above him, Reaper One banked left and angled in again.
"Yes," Chiron roared into the air. "All of it. Unleash everything you have at me. We will all die together in a mighty clash of metal and flesh. To me, Xenos Filth, to me, the last lamenter, is ready."
Talon Squad stacked up against the wall of the only dedicated military hangar at the spaceport. Far bigger than any other, it sat on the northernmost edge of Landing Field 1. Tau forces on site were unaware of their presence. The kill team was still operating under full stealth. As Karras looked at his brothers, all he saw of their physical forms was a shifting and bending of light, as if each were made of slightly smoky glass that distorted what lay beyond. Karras pressed his left hand to the wall and muttered the litany of sight beyond sight, pushing his astral awareness through plasteel-reinforced rockcrete and into the echoing space beyond. Under a plasteel-beamed ceiling some 80 meters high, a great black form lay sleek and silent and still. No Epsilon. No sign of the two space marines who had betrayed Androcles and his brothers. All around it, however, were fire warriors in hard cover. Guns at the ready, soulless things they barely registered in the warp at all. Karras could not read their mood, for they had no aura. But he could see how anxious they looked, how tense, primed for a fight. He read the name on the side of the ship, knowing already what it would say. Song of Skaldara. In every detail, she matched the Picts Sigmar had provided. In her hold, he detected the spirit signatures of human crew, but no Tyranid or hybrid specimens. No active Gellerfield. He would have felt it pushing him back into his physical body. Satisfied, he pulled his hand from the hangar wall. "Epsilon's ship," he told the others. "She's not with it. There are crew inside, but no navigator, no astropath." "So we ignore it," said Solarian sharply. "We have 4 minutes till these skies are buzzing with razor sharks. None of us will be flying out of here once that happens." He turned his head to the side and muttered, "I knew Shadowbreaker would be a bloody debacle." Zeed was priming some remark when there was a sudden ear-splitting ripple of charges detonating. The kill team operators all reacted at once, whipping their heads around towards the landing field that was the source of the noise. There they saw black smoke rising in a ring some 600 meters across. A series of small charges had blown, creating a long circular channel in the surface. As they watched, the rockcrete within this ring sank a full meter and split straight down the middle. Each half began to pull apart, creating a growing gulf between the two, turning the circle into a vast, gaping hole. The ground began to shake.
"Copley," voxed Karras. "Eyes on landing field one. Are you seeing this?"
Copley didn't need the monitors. From the north-facing window of the control tower, she could see it happening with her own eyes.
"No wonder we couldn't find them in the hangars. They were underground all along."
The great, broad back of a Tau ship had started to emerge now. The platform on which it sat rose slowly to ground level. Even from here, she could see that its engines were already well into their warming-up procedure. Tau infantry surrounded it, along with clusters of crates, loaders, and everything else the Tau needed to prep a ship for travel. She couldn't see the far side of the field, blocked from view by the bulk of the ship, but it was a safe bet to assume there were just as many fire warriors there too.
"Treskor," she muttered, "those fighters!"
3.5 minutes out," replied the corporal.
"We're screwed."
Talon 6 and Reaper 1 were still fighting armor and infantry on the western landing field, heavily outnumbered, with Chiron more or less pinned down now, pressed into cover by missile and railgun fire behind the remains of the ruined hangar's south wall. Saber Squad and Spear Team 3 were fighting a tide of foes spilling out of the last two unsearched hangars on the eastern field. They were facing heavy pressure there. With the emergence of the Tau ship, all the Xenos that had previously been lying in wait must have been ordered to engage aggressively. Cold Wave had decided this was the moment. A storm of bright fire blazed in all directions. Laz against plasma, Bolter against pulse rounds. And north, right where the ship had appeared, were Talon Squad and Black Eagle. Already the XV-8s had turned their attention to the Thunderhawk. So too had several Tau infantry, wielding man-portable launchers. Copley saw Tau missiles leap into the sky. Black Eagle launched countermeasures. Explosions blossomed in the air above the Tau spacecraft. Black Eagle roared out of range, then began to swing around, her turbo laser glowing as it charged up.
"Reapers 1 and 2, move to the north field immediately and target the engines of that ship. It must not get into the air, is that clear? This is where we stop them, for Emperor and Honor. This is where it ends."
"Archangel," boxed Reaper 1, If I leave the dreadnought now...
Epsilon is priority one, Ventius. We have to stop that ship taking off. You have your orders.
Chiron's voice broke in over the link.
The woman is right, he rumbled. This fight is mine, Flyboy. Stop the rogue Inquisitor. She must not escape.
There was a pause.
Reaper One confirms. Breaking off to engage Tau ship.
Reaper Two confirms.
Black Eagle, voxed Copley. Cripple that ship! Hit the engines!
From the tower she saw Black Eagle swoop in, ignoring the hail of rounds that surged up to meet her. Her bolters were blazing, ripping into any exposed Tau they could get an angle on. But just as she was ready to fire on the Tau ship's port engine, something leapt into the sky. Something imposingly large, but so fast it was a blur. It landed on the back of the Tau ship, leveled a large, long-barreled weapon at Black Eagle, and fired. Searing light scored the air, biting into the Thunderhawk's armored belly. She shook hard. Half a second later, her turbo laser fired. A second beam of light slashed down at the Tau ship, thick and powerful and utterly deadly. But it smashed harmlessly into an invisible wall of force. Colors rippled outwards from the point of impact, revealing the overlapping twin hemispheres of the energy shields that had stopped the shot.
Shield, drones!
Black Eagle pulled up and away, a long scar on her underside glowing angry red. The giant figure on the back of the Tau ship turned, tracking her. A dozen missiles burst from two shoulder-mounted pods and screamed after the Imperial craft. Chaff and flares burst into the air in Black Eagle's wake. 11 of the nimble little missiles burst into fire, but the 12th, furthest behind, speared through the countermeasure cloud and tagged the Thunderhawk's port-side turbine. Black Eagle staggered and leaned hard to the right, bleeding a trail of thick black smoke into the sky.
Blood of saints, cursed Copley. To think they kept that in reserve until now.
Over the Vox she called out.
All task force units, be advised. The ship is being defended by an XV-104. Do you understand? There's a riptide out there. Bet your souls that Coldwave is the pilot.
A riptide. And just 3 minutes until the air was buzzing with Tau interceptors. All eyes in the control room were on her. She could feel them. Not the eyes of men giving up. Arcturus had crawled through the fire of impossible odds before. She could feel her men willing her to fight on, to stay on top of this, despite how sick, how tired they all felt.
While we're still breathing, we can still win. It's not over. Talon, she voxed. You have to take out that riptide. Fast! Black Eagle can kill those engines, but not while that damned battlesuit is in play.
Karras's voice betrayed neither confidence nor doubt.
Moving to engage Riptide, Archangel. Reaper flight. Buy us some room to move. Keep the rest off our backs if you can.
Reaper One copies, Talon, voxed Ventius. Moving to assist.
Reaper Two, likewise, Talon, said Gracker.
Black Eagle coming around again, voxed Tarval. Get me a clear shot and I'll deliver, Talon.
Major, said Triskel. The first of the Razor Shark reinforcements just passed the 20-kilometer line. Damn it!
Now that time was against them, now that they were down to minutes only, Coldwave had finally put his cards on the table, and they were all aces. All the pieces were in play. In a few minutes, the Tau would have total air superiority, and that ship would be hauling its odious cargo skyward, leaving the Imperial Assault Force either dead or cut off, with no hope of achieving the primary mission objective.
We'll die on a fail, thought Copley.
And the thought burned in her, scorched her uncompromising, unrelenting warrior soul like a splash of acid.
Listen up, all of you, she snapped. Leave your stations. Come here.
8 of them left. They stood facing her, upright and ready despite the biological breakdown that was silently advancing inside each of them. Warriors all. But for the sporadic fits of coughing, no one would ever have known they were dying.
My lads, she thought. My lions!
Hard to express how proud she felt. This one had been a mess from the start. The ultramarine had said it often enough, though the other Adeptus Astartes had paid him no mind. How could Sigma have underestimated Epsilon and Cold Wave so badly? That didn't matter now. She held the gaze of each of her men. They knew her only too well. They knew what was coming. She already saw the assent in their eyes. She grinned at them, knowing they needed no explanation. Drawing her bolt pistol from its holster, she said, "Let's go, then! Gear up, all of you!" They grinned back at her, eyes bright at the thought of taking the fight back out there and maybe dying like fighters should. Maybe even making some kind of difference, however small. Copley raised her pistol and shot out the control room windows. 15 seconds later, all nine were ziplining down to the rockcrete below. The moment they hit it, they were off at a run. Copley coughed a little as her feet pounded the rockcrete. She ignored the blood on the back of her hand, where she'd raised it to her mouth. She'd have time. She didn't need much. Up ahead, the noise of the Tau ship's engines was gaining volume. All around it, an intense firefight flashed and blazed. She saw fire warriors being punched from their feet by powerful rounds, their wounds exploding a second later, blue gore spuming into the air. She saw others screaming, clutching wet blue stumps, where a second before there had been an arm or leg. A black shadow slipped and spun among them, taking limbs and lives in a deadly dance. She saw walls of bright yellow fire gush forth from another black shape, pouring out in great sweeping arcs, reminding her of a child's tale she'd heard, a story of a monster that breathed such flame. Where the fire touched, charred black figures flailed and toppled. "Welcome, woman," the battle called out to her as the distance halved. "This is right where you belong."
Chapter 53. Cold Wave watched the beam from his ion accelerator cut into the Imperial gunship's belly as it roared down at him. He marveled that the craft had no energy shield, just dense armor plating. Idiot Guella. Everything they built was so clumsy, so inelegant. He had been hoping to punch through to the gunship's reactor, but he wasn't familiar with this craft. His targeting was best guess. Apparently, the guess was off. The gunship's dorsal laser unloaded its own deadly beam, targeting the portside engine of the ship on which his Riptide stood. It was what he would have done, why he had placed his shield drones there. Everything hung on getting off-world. If he failed, all his sacrifices, all the stains he could never wash off, all the deaths, the horrors, the doubts, the guilt, the shame, all of it would mean nothing. But he wouldn't lose. Couldn't. Soon, he and the precious specimens would be far away from here. He just had to protect the ship until the engines were fully powered up and his air support arrived. He couldn't risk leaving any foes to strike it out of the sky while it tried to climb. The ship was heavy and slow in atmosphere. The razor sharks were almost on sight. The Guella were too late. They had scoured the hangars as expected, wasting their time while the trap continued to close around them. He had known they would, had planned it so. Still, their resilience surprised him. They ought to be dead already. He'd arrayed more than enough armor and infantry against them. Their survival made no sense. The Inquisitor's foul-smelling bodyguards had not been making idle boasts after all. They had warned him not to underestimate this death watch to which they belonged. How he hated them. Hated that they had been right. If not for the hidden underground hangar. Silently, he gave thanks to the Earthcast engineers who had conceived of it, had built it on the chance that war with the Yahei would one day come to Tychonis. It had been planned as a way to get the ruling Aun safely off-world in the event of a ground war. The need for it had come sooner than expected, and under different circumstances. The human gunship's powerful dorsal laser struck and was nullified. Waves of coruscating light pulsed across a bubble of protective force. Cold Wave turned, and with a thought, locked his smart missile system onto the gunship's fiery tail. So inefficient, the damned Gwella. The craft's three turbines were putting out prodigious heat. His riptide trembled as a salvo of missiles leapt from its launches. He watched them tear through the sky. High on the rush of battle, it had been so long. He felt almost as if they were an extension of his own body, that he was reaching out an impossibly long arm to strike the gunship down, to swat it like a fly. His lip curled in anger as he watched the gunship defy that strike, causing his missiles to detonate short of target with a cloud of chaff and bright, hot flares. One, just one, got through. He saw it bite. As the gunship roared off, lilting to one side, wounded, Cold Wave's armor rattled, its shield absorbing a torrent of fire from the ground. Surprised, he spun and saw his forces around the spaceship engaged by bulky, black-armored forms rezzing out of some kind of stealth field. Cries rang out. Bodies dropped. His infantry were being cut down mercilessly.
Space! Marines!
He turned to bring his own armament to bear, but was again struck by a fusillade of explosive shells. His shield prevented any damage, but the impact shook him and sent red warning glyphs scrolling across his retinas. With a savage scowl on his blue-gray face, he engaged his jump jets and leapt from the back of the ship, landing on the rockcrete below with the cushioned smoothness and grace of cutting-edge Tau technology. To his immediate left, he saw a space marine with long shining claws eviscerate three fire warriors in a sweeping blur. As fast as thought, he dashed towards it and swept the barrel of his ion accelerator in a whistling lateral arc that would break the space marine in half. He hit nothing. The space marine wasn't there. On jump jets of its own, it had leapt onto the back of the Tau ship. Cold Wave had been baited. The gunfire had brought him down to join the fight,